Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 432. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Emily Soden.
What's up? Back and not in a laughing fit this time.
No, I've said nothing funny so far the whole of today, and you haven't really either, so we're just miserable.
Really? I mean, it makes for the best podcast. So, you know, they had to listen to over a minute of us stopping and starting because of what I said last week.
Probably the best bit of the recording, to be fair.
Yeah, to be fair, it was.
But don't worry, we've got control of our faculties today, and as a result, we'll be dour and morose the entire time. Oh, we're going to talk about some games, then.
We must.
All right, then. Well, in that case, we'll do just that, because we've got a bunch for you this week. Loads of news. Lich Spear is going from Switch onto iOS for your gaming pleasure. And reversing the trend, Subsurface Circular is going from iOS, and also all other consoles and that, onto the Nintendo Switch. That's nice for you there. They've fixed rhyme, or have they? Ooh, it's better, but is it? Not entirely sure. So look forward to that. We've got an interview with the guys behind Layers of Fear, the dudes who did the port to bring it onto the Switch. How did they cram all of that spook onto such a tiny screen? We will find out. Plus, the week's new releases, including the likes of Alto's Odyssey. We've been waiting for it for ages, and it is now here. And puzzly games. You got your Dice Brawl Captain's League. You got your Disassembler, which I've just had a go on and I am already loving massively. Glitch Dash, Sinker, loads of stuff coming for you today. But first, how's about a little news? So in reversal of the standard trend, we've got a game coming from Switch over onto iOS. And it happens to be one that you played and, if I'm right, reviewed, Lich Spear.
Yeah, it's kind of come out everywhere. But like on PC and Vita initially, then it came to Switch last year.
Vita? That's a word I haven't heard in a while.
The forbidden platform.
Oh, poor Vita.
It's all right. Things get old. We must move on.
But it's
a really, really cool game.
This is the spear-chucking thing, is it?
Yeah, you... It seems like one thing at first, but you stand in one particular place and each level is stationary. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like those, you know, the zombie killing games where you're plonked in one place and you just got to kill them all.
It's sort of tower defense if your tower was a semi-naked man with a spear.
Yes. You control the angle your spear throws at and you've got a variety of different enemies which go down like differently. They go down in one shot if you hit them in the head. Some ones who have, like, shields take a few more times. You've got to get them at the right angle. There's also, like, aerial flyers and fish and all sorts. It's really much harder than you think it is.
And it's all done in this sort of 80s retro. It's almost a little bit Thor because it plays on a kind of Nordic mythology, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, the design of it is just so rad.
And they're pulling it over onto iOS. Now, neither of us have played this version because it's not out yet. It's not arriving until...
Next week,
yeah. So March 1st is the release date. This kind of game could work perfectly, because if they do it in the way I imagine they'll do it, they'll do a pull and release style control system like your Angry Birds.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how it's done.
Because I assume with the Switch, unless they do weird motion controls, I assume they're using the analog stick to, like, you know, angle it and pull back and then a button to release, right?
I can't remember if it's actually the pull back and release one, or if it's just the, you know, you push forward and kind of choose your angle.
Right, yeah.
Or your power. But I remember it being, like, so much harder than I initially thought, because the enemies come at you so fast, you have to react really quickly.
Well, my feeling is that they'll do it in the same way they did Dandara, when they put that onto mobile, which is, it's that pull and release thing where it actually works perfectly. Now, that one happened to be you pull in the direction you want to go. You move your thumb that way and then release and off she flies. So it can work both ways, but just that kind of control system does work really well on mobile because we're all so used to it. It's so instinctive at this point. So it's being launched at £3.99 or $3.99, but it's currently on pre-order on the App Store, which is kind of a new thing they've introduced recently with that preview page. But I didn't realise they were allowing you to pre-order stuff with a discount now as well to get you in. That pre-order culture has properly extended onto the App Store digitally. Not sure how I feel about that. Because it's just encouraging people to buy games without knowing whether they're good or not.
It's true, but isn't that the whole point?
But yeah, the pre-order culture is dangerous because it does encourage people just to buy stuff whether or not it's any good. And that always alarms me a little bit because it's misleading in terms of sales. We sold loads, you know, in the first week. You're like, great, but it was because everyone pre-ordered it before it came out, realised it was pants. But if you look at the sales, it makes it look like it was a great game. It's just a bit, I don't know, not 100% on it. However, you can get it for £1.99 or $1.99 if you wish to pre-order it in advance. I've got positive feelings. I think it could probably work very well. And you like the original game, so we'll see. Lichspear coming next week. Now, on the reverse of that, Subsurface Circular, which is Mike Bithell's game of robot subway politics, let's say, which came over onto the iPad after having been on Steam and that business, is going over onto the Switch, which is an easy fit because it's just a branching narrative adventure, text-based stuff. We talked to Mike earlier in the year, or late last year, about the game coming over, and it'll work perfectly fine because all you're doing is selecting dialogue choices. That's kind of it. That one also is coming next week, March 1st, and apparently is going to be £4.79, which is very reasonable. It's a lovely, dinky little thing, and you can play through it all in, you know, a few hours. It's not super long, but it's really nicely done. And like with all this episodic television stuff that we're getting, the kind of anthology shows and series, this kind of fits into that bracket for me, where it's a short, self-contained little thing. It's not setting up a gigantic franchise of talking robots on a subway. It's just its own little self-contained story that you can play through and boom, gone, done. And I like that stuff. So we can look forward to that one coming next week as well. Now, the thing that I think you've spent most time on, certainly as one of the news stories, is Rime. So Rime came over onto the Switch, and it's fair to say wasn't in the best state.
No.
It's the third-person exploration, pretty environmental action or puzzle adventure game. And I think people were a bit disappointed, again, pre-order culture, when it came out that it was nowhere near as good as the console versions of the game. It's not really a visually super taxing looking game, right? Because it's done in a sort of cartoony style, isn't it? It's not hyper-real.
Yeah, it's not tremendously demanding, but I think the Rime developers just had a time frame that they needed to stick to, and they just did the best they could.
Okay, you think they're up against it in terms of the schedule?
Yeah, it seems that way in the Reddit posts, like when one of the lads took to Reddit and was just answering people's questions.
Hmm.
It was supposed to come out in January, I think, 2017, but ended up coming out in November.
Oh, right. Well, that's quite a big delay then, isn't it?
Hmm.
Well, what happened when it came out was it didn't look as good, frame rate was bad, you got a lot of nasty-looking jaggy stuff going on, the environmental detail was pretty low. So, what they've done is they've boshed out 1.0.2, the patch. It is a big thing, it's 2.9 gigabytes of info, and having seen now videos of the game running side-by-side, the old version and the new version, it's made significant improvements on it. It's much, much better, though it still is not perfect. The anti-aliasing is way better, or whatever smoothening technique they're using. There are far fewer jaggy, shimmery edge things going on. There's a lot more detail, even just from the intro. You can see when camera rolls out over the waves, you can actually see wave detail now. Because before, it just looked like a big blue smush, which wasn't so good.
Yeah, it's actually crazy to see how different the opening sequences are in terms of detail.
So that's really good. You can still see there's problems with frame rate drops quite badly in later sections of the game. And they've given an explanation saying that it's to do with the volume streaming, I think that's what the explanation was.
Again, on that Reddit chat, they basically said to be able to get rid of it completely, they'd have to break the game apart and build it again from the ground up.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where the different platforms and the way they behave, just like this game will work fine on a PS4 architecture, but when you put it on the Switch, it's just like, you can't just do a one-to-one port, and each system has its own requirements, and it seems that this one has fallen victim to whatever the Switch's delicate internals can handle. It's better if you've bought it. You might want to revisit it and take a look at it, but still not quite there, and it doesn't sound like it is ever going to be.
Yeah, from the sounds of it, I think this might be the only patch there is.
Oh.
Like, from the sounds of it, I mean, obviously don't quote me on it, but When I was reading into all of the replies and stuff, it seemed like this is the only patch that it was going to be for the game.
And this happens everywhere. Bad ports, you can point them out across every platform and every type of game and everything. And sometimes it is, this game was not created for this platform and we're just trying to cram it on here as best we can. And, you know, I mean, the classic example of this is the Xbox 360 and the PS3. The PS3, despite on paper being the more powerful machine, always had the inferior ports because people had a great deal of trouble coding for the cell architecture that the PS3 had, whereas the Xbox 360 was basically a PC in a box. And, you know, developers know how to work with that architecture. But you can download it right now, obviously for free, and maybe this is as good as it gets, but it's better than nothing, I guess. It's not just full Silent Hill HD where they went, oh, sorry, did you want a patch on the... I forget which one didn't get one, but they just flat out said, yeah, we're not doing the patch for either the 360 or the PS3. Sorry, it's rubbish, and it's going to stay rubbish because it's not worth our time. I'm like, oh, great.
Well, that's pretty cheeky.
Cheers for that, then, lads. Nicely done, you buggers. Which is why I've got a PS2 with a component cable sitting underneath my TV at the moment with Silent Hill 2 in it and nothing else.
My PlayStation 2 stopped saving.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so, like, I basically can't save my games anymore for whatever reason. But that's the only reason I ever stopped using my PlayStation 2. It still remains one of my favourite consoles.
You mean you couldn't switch out the memory cards or anything and it just wouldn't save onto anything?
Yeah, it literally just wouldn't save.
Mm.
Just really, really, really weird.
Mine's still running, pretty robust, after God knows how long it's been alive. as you say, good console, that one. Fond memories. And I've always just got to keep Silent Hill 2 close, so I know it's there if I need it. So yeah, check out Rime in its slightly better state on the Switch if you fancy it. Layers of Fear is a first-person horror game that arrived on multiple platforms a while back. It's a painter's world where the building he's in and to some degree his sanity is coming apart before his eyes. A haunted house which shifts and rearranges itself as it's explored. It is now out on the Switch as of this week, and I'm joined by Rafael from Bloober Games. Hello, Rafael.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Good to talk to you, sir. Now, the game itself has been around for a couple of years now, hasn't it?
It was actually released in February 2016 for PC, yeah. PS4, and Xbox One. So having the release on Nintendo Switch almost precisely 2 years later, it's a very, very cool anniversary for us.
Must be a fun, like, flashback to that time. It's weird because first-person horror is getting, like, a little bit of a mainstream revival. It never went away, but with things like PT appearing and doing as well as it did off the back of just a short demo and, unfortunately, no game to follow it.
Yeah.
And then Resi 7 did very well as well by reinventing the franchise, by going with that first-person perspective. And, obviously, Layers of Fear is also on that list. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, like, the first-person perspective often works as the best, you know, way to immerse the player. With first-person perspective, there's a limited view that you have on what's going on the screen. So you can, you know, do all this magic with the corner of the eye, things that, you know, are behind you, but you will, you know, it will take a little bit of time to actually turn around and see what's going on. So it all works to the benefit of doing horror. Much better than you would have a DPP camera, for instance.
In some ways, and this is true of horror cinema as well, the fear lies in the moment between when you hear the noise and then when you turn to see it, whatever that might be.
Yeah, like the studies show that the thing we are afraid most as people is actually the unknown. So everything we don't know what it is, you know, our imagination fills that up. So you don't really have to show anything to influence the player, you know, without showing anything in the game. So if you're afraid of a monster that will, you know, jump at you from behind, you hear the sound, you probably think there's a monster there, but then you turn up, it might be basically everything else. It will have the same effect.
Yeah, yeah, well, there are lots of tricks that are used in both games and cinemas. You've mentioned sort of some of them there, but you've got, like, you know, grotesque visuals and gore. You've got loud noises. And in the case of this game and lots of other properties you end up with, there's an element of often tragic backstory of something lurking in the protagonist's past that's kind of haunting them. As a producer on the game, what creeps you out and what did you want to incorporate into Layers of Fear?
Well, that's a huge question, actually. Like, the most important thing for me in a horror game is actually the audio design. And okay. Music is what stirs the imagination most with me. However, Layers of Fear is kind of different with comparison to most of the horror games because we don't have a monster per se. There's a being in the game that's, you know, heavily connected to the plot, but it's hard to say that it's an actual monster or ghost even. So the game is mostly about, you know, falling into madness and succumbing to all kinds of, you know, tragic history that, you know, have a burden on you as a person. So We had to build the game a little bit differently in that remark. So we couldn't add, you know, monsters that will haunt you and go through pipes and jump out of you from ducts or whatever. It's also not a type of horror games that we would like to do here in the company. So that's why we have a difference. With audio, you can stir the imagination very, very much, because as I said, like, people will fill out the gaps. The biggest focus basically in the game is to actually make the game with this dark and creepy atmosphere. So we wanted to make the players basically on edge for the whole time and give them all those kind of weird and very trippy visuals to go with it, to make it kind of a unique take on horror.
Yeah, because you've got this Gothic Mansion-styled setting, which is quite familiar if people are aware of the haunted house genre, you know, on a creaky Gothic old-fashioned mansion. That's quite standard. But with the protagonist being a painter and then his descent into madness affecting the visuals around him, so the world and the mansion itself, not only do you get paint appearing on the walls and messages and, you know, weird imagery, you also get this notion that you will walk into a room, the door closes behind you, you will then turn around and the door's vanished. So the actual geography of the place starts to move and switch and change. When did you stumble across that idea?
Well, basically, it was one of the first ideas we had for the game. So it was a gameplay mechanic that we had far earlier than we had the story, for instance, for the game itself.
Right.
But yeah, like, we wanted to play with the uncertainty of players. So although you know the environment you are right now, in Layers of Fear you can never expect anything from the game, because, you know, one turn of the camera can actually turn the whole environment around you into something else. So what you just said, like, you enter through a door and then you don't see another way out from the room, so you turn your back, you want to leave through that door from which you entered, and, you know, it's not there anymore. So we are doing a lot of that in the game. So working with the player's perception and fiddling with the idea of familiarity of the environment, like, you can never expect anything from the game. Like, everything is subject to change. I believe that makes Layers of Fear quite a unique horror in the market.
Well, it feels quite internal in that way, because, as you say, there's not a lot of creatures running at you. It's not an assault of zombies and end of level bosses you're constantly defeating. The idea is that the fear comes from within to some degree. It's this character's history which is the antagonist in the game.
Yeah, like, the whole concept is very is actually revolving very much around the plot itself. So once we had the idea for the mechanic, we're thinking how to best use it in the game. Then came the idea of using classic art, which scares a lot of people, to be honest. Those dark paintings, like, there was a movement in art at some point. I believe it's called the Art of Ugliness. So basically, what the painters did is they took whatever they felt was ugly and they actually painted it, because it's kind of this psychology, you know, it's ugly enough that it's starting to become beautiful.
Yes.
So we kind of worked around that. So when we had the art inspirations, the next thing was actually the story, of this painter that, you know, was succumbing to madness because of the strain that he had on his life. So in the game, you will learn his tragic story. You will understand why it all happened to him and why he's in this kind of a madness loop trying to get out of it.
Well, talking about putting a strain on things, the game was originally available for consoles, but now it's come over onto the handheld. So it's been ported onto the Switch. How tricky was that? Did you have to make any compromises bringing the game over onto the handheld platform with the specs and the limited SD card size and that sort of thing?
With Legacy, we never treated this game as a port per se. Like, we do understand that, you know, the content in the game is kind of, it's been around for, let's say, that 2 years when we launched the game on previous platforms. Although we always treat it as a new project because of the features that the Switch has. So, you know, HD Rumble, the gyroscopes, and basically Joy-Cons. So how much we can do with that, it all bumps up the immersion. So that was our goal. We actually started treating Legacy not like a simple port, but basically a new full-fledged game. So, okay. Yeah, there were... quite a lot of hiccups during the way to port the game. Obviously, Nintendo Switch, although I love the console very much, it has its limits regarding memory, for instance. So bringing it to the console was kind of a tricky thing to do, mostly because of that memory.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of rewrite how we stream the levels into the game, so to avoid, you know, long loading times or FPS drops.
Yeah.
There was a lot of work that went into it. We did what best we could. From the reviews that actually are coming slowly to the market, it seems that we did kind of a good job on that. Although, you know, we are not kidding ourselves. We know there are probably a spot or two when the FPSs drop beneath 30 FPS. Although, as I said, it's just a few moments. So I think what we did was quite an achievement. We seriously had to rewrite most of the streaming in the game. So
it's funny you mentioned that, because we were talking earlier in the show about Rime coming over onto the Switch and how that suffered immense problems when it comes to things like frame rates and stuff. And they said that pretty much what you're saying, that in order to fix it, they'd have to change the way the game streams the levels in, like from scratch. And basically, they couldn't really get around it without breaking the game to bits and rebuilding it.
Yeah, that's what we were doing as well. So it wasn't an easy task. Although I think the biggest turning point for us was actually the moment when we discovered that Unity, which we built the game on, was actually treating Nintendo Switch as a tablet, not a console. So a lot of the scripting had to be rewritten to actually take that mobile coding into account. So we had to rewrite quite a lot of the game to actually fix a lot of problems. But when we figured that out, it actually helped us a lot to make the game happen and look so good still on Nintendo Switch.
Well, the version that you've brought over, am I right in thinking that this includes, is it all of the DLC that you've got?
Yeah, like the Layers of Fear Legacy is basically how the name says. So it's a whole legacy of Layers of Fear IP. So it has the base game, the Inheritance DLC. It has the Halloween event that, you know, turns once a year on Halloween time. So you can enter this creepy room and fiddle with a ghost board of sorts to summon all kinds of weird effects that happen. So yeah, we basically in Legacy we have all of the content we had for the IP plus all those cool Nintendo Switch features that we have implemented.
I was going to say, those features you mentioned earlier, things like the HD Rumble, what stuff have you been able to add then using the tech? What's the new feature you're most happy with?
Like, the most important thing for us was actually the use of Joy-Cons. So you can take the Joy-Cons into your hands and basically open everything by swinging your palm into one or the other directions, opening doors, opening drawers, opening chests. It actually adds a lot to the immersion. And in that regard, I feel that Nintendo Switch is basically the best platform. We have Layers of Fear right now. But yeah, it's also, you know, that HD Rumble that a little bit adds to the tactile immersion. So we could fiddle with that a little bit to increase the amount of tension before a big reveal or whatnot. So we could fiddle with that. We actually also use touchscreen if you play in handheld mode. So although you can look around with it, well, it's not all that good to play it that way, although we feel that there will be some people disabled maybe in some ways that will help them play the game this way. But actually, the best parts where we use the touch screen are some of the puzzles. So basically, my favorite one is at one point in the game, you find this old telephone, which has this revolving shield with numbers, if you remember those times.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so you actually can use the touchscreen to pick the numbers. I know it's kind of, you know, sounds lame, but seriously, it's such a cool feature. Each time I play the game, from the moment we have implemented that, I always use the touchscreen to actually make this puzzle. Okay. It's such a fun feeling to do that. Maybe it's just me, but I seriously like that feature we have.
Well, before we go, what I was interested to hear about is there's a difference of opinion about how well horror can work on small portable screens, because often they encourage you to, you know, close all the windows, play on a big TV, turn all the lights out, create the atmosphere, it's going to be well spooky. Whereas if you're sitting on a train or something with a Nintendo Switch in your hand with people wandering past, there's a question about how immersive that kind of environment can be. Is this something you recommend that you should play, for example, docked on the Switch, or do you find it works just as well with you just sitting on the sofa with the smaller screen and it all right up in your face?
Yeah, I think there are benefits to playing both ways. Obviously, if you play docked with your, you know, curtains down and headphones on a big screen, yeah, it's like you would play every other horror game out there. But then again, you know, think about that. You can take the Switch to your bed and, you know, play it under the sheets if you are scared. Or, you know, make a fort from pillows and play in a fort.
Oh, now you're talking.
But yeah, there's also, you know, the idea I'm trying, like, it's what I'm doing on social media from time to time, try to make people actually go and play in some abandoned house, maybe, or, you know, in a dark cellar or whatnot. Like, think of the ideas where you can play horror if you have it on the go. Like, you can do it everywhere. So why not play a horror game in a dark and dump cellar somewhere where, you know, someone locks you in and you have to finish the game before you can leave or whatnot. You know, the possibilities are immense.
I hadn't considered that. Well, when I do get a Nintendo Switch, you'll find me lurking in a sewer, replaying Layers of Fear. Thank you for the idea. I think that's a good one. Well, thanks for joining us today, Rafael, and I look forward to getting my hands on it myself in the future.
Thank you very much.
Out and about this week, we'll go straight to the big release. Alto's Odyssey is here. We've been keeping this one under our hats for a while because we've sort of, it's been sitting there on my iOS device for weeks.
It's been driving you crazy, isn't it?
Not been able to really say anything about it or show anyone any video. It's been very annoying. But now it's out in the wild, the sequel to the incredibly successful Alto's Adventure, which debuted on iOS and then popped over onto Android in a free-to-play form. It is very much the same game, the same feel, the same flow, with a different environment and a few extra wrinkles thrown in. So we've both played this. Initial impressions, M, how did you feel about this versus Alto's Adventure? Did you get the same warm feelings?
Yeah, I definitely got the same warm feelings. I was worried at first when I started playing it because it just felt exactly the same.
Mm.
And obviously there's nothing wrong with that formula because it worked very well. But when they started introducing different elements into it, it just changed the game, really.
Yeah. We've had that off a few people because people have watched the video and even people have downloaded it because it's a premium game, £4.99. And initial comments from some people have been like, it's just the same game. Like, it's not worth it. Which is fair if you only play the first 10, 15 minutes or something because the environment shifted. Originally, it was skating down snowy hills on a snowboard, doing the stunts, doing the backflips. Whereas this time they've moved it over into a desert. So now you're going through this desert environment, albeit with a constantly changing weather system, which is beautiful. So it's always cycling from day to night, from dry weather to wet weather to storms to, you know, and it create some of the most gorgeous backdrops that I've seen for a while. It falls into that arty game category, along with Monument Valley and things like that. Mm. All the pinks and purples and blues, and it's a Zen game.
So pretty to look at.
It's absolutely lovely. But at first, you're just doing the usual stuff. Jump, do the jumps, do a backflip, land. In Alto's Adventure, I think there were like poles there, and you could jump over and surf down the washing line thing with a load of bunting on it. In this one, they're strung together with weather balloons or hot air balloons. So far, so much the same. But then you start introducing extra things, so you realise you can actually jump on top of those weather balloon things and kind of use them as bouncing pads to jump across. So you can extend your stunt that much further. So you're like, alright, that's cool. And then you've got things like rope bridges, which are introduced, where you surf across them and all the boards of the bridge start to fall away behind you, which is a lovely effect. Just an aesthetic thing, but it is cool. The most noticeable mechanical change is they've got cliff faces in the background, so you skate past these big old cliffs, and you can actually wall grind up them. That's the biggest new wrinkle, I think. So if you press and hold the jump button when you're in front of these surfaces, you start to surf, skate, board, whatever the verb is, move up the side of it, and then when you release, you kind of do a little kick jump off the edge as well. And if there are a series of these kind of cliff faces strung out next to each other with gaps in between, you can kind of skate up and then jump off the edge in the gap and then land on it again, skate further up, 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 and hop your way through and put together these really nice ascending jump combinations. And it works lovely. It's really nice to play again. There are a few other things as well. So there are little jars that you can collect. You smash through them as you skate, and they give you power-ups. There's one that gives you the ability to collect more coins, so a little magnet. We've seen those in loads of games. And there's like a lily, a kind of purple lily flower that you smash through, and it gives you protection against crashing into rocks and whatnot. So all of this adds to what was already a really, really solid skeletal structure of a game. It isn't light years ahead of the previous one. They haven't completely switched everything up. It is Alto's Adventure Plus, I think.
Hmm.
And I've already seen, you know, some people complaining about that. I'm not bothered. I'm not complaining about it, because that first game was lush and everyone got so dialed into it. And I think the tweaks have made it better. I think they have made it more playable. I do think it's a better game.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, like, Alto's Adventure was so good and just so lovely and just really, really chill at times as well that...
Yeah.
You can't add too much to it to just be different, you know?
No, I think if you went too far the other way, right? Because my feeling like is some people wanted it to be different. They wanted it to be more. For me, what more would have meant was like, we want more tricks. We want more stunts. We want you to be able to do more stuff. Because all you do is a backflip. It's the same control system where you hold your finger on the screen and you slowly rotate backwards. That's the only stunt you can kind of perform. And if you're going to make it more complicated, then you start getting into SSX tricky territory, and it stops being a Zen game and becomes a Tony Hawk style stunt machine. And those games are not Zen games. Those are skill challenge stress games. And that's a totally different thing from what Alto's Adventure is. That's not what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be this endless running, fun, Zen, beautiful, relaxing flow of a game. And that's what they've tried to keep here. So I don't think you can change it too much without fundamentally altering the DNA of what it is.
Yeah, I think that's completely on the money.
So if you buy it and you're expecting this like massive evolution of what Outer's Adventure was, it's not that. But it is more, it is better, and I do think it's worth it. I mean, if you were really, really down with the first game. It's £4.99, $4.99, as I say. I do think it's worth that as well, because people got so much time out of Alto's Adventure. You can play it kind of forever. So I think you get your money's worth. It's not a thing where you complete it in half an hour or something. So it goes and goes and goes and goes. But I really liked it. Check out the review video. You can see all the things I'm talking about with the wall grinding and whatnot. And go and check it out. Now, let's talk about some other new releases. Glitch Dash, let's do that. You've had a play on this, Em. What's this all about?
Yeah, this is like a reaction-based runner, but interestingly enough, like as opposed to Geometry Dash, which obviously is heavily successful and incredibly aggravating. You do it from a first-person perspective, which I thought was really, really interesting.
Mm.
And you've got to kind of run, and the level builds right in front of your eyes. So it's not like you can predict way, way in the future. You've kind of just got, you know, 3-4 seconds to react to it, where you've got to either jump over gaps or slide under mounts or avoid spikes, dips in the floor. But then it gets even weirder when it introduces arrows. When you hit an arrow, it changes the whole level, like it flips it on its side, like, you know, those you know, the films like Inception and stuff, where the walls move, the whole thing rotates. It's exactly like that.
Okay.
And it's so disorienting, but so good.
I saw a video. I like the way that, as you say, the level constructs itself as you're running. So it's got blocks flying in from the sides of the screen, going doof, 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 and assembling as you walk through. So as you say, you don't quite know what's coming until it suddenly forms itself. And you're like, crap! And you have to, you know, duck, dodge, jump, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and what I really like about that, so the whole reaction-based runner thing is not new. And the actual things you do to avoid such a thing, you know, jump over, slide under, that's not new either.
No.
But the fact that you're given next to no time to react, that it builds itself in front of you, that it introduces the whole wall moving thing, makes it feel fresh.
How do the controls handle? How do you control the thing?
Literally just swipe left or right on the screen.
Oh, okay.
And up and down to, you know, slide under or jump over.
Gotcha,
super,
gotcha.
Super easy. There's no, like, joysticks or anything like that. It's perfectly tailored for mobile.
No, that's good. Like that. So that's a free-to-play game. You can get that for iOS and Android.
Because it's free-to-play, it's like a life thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Like, right. It's the only thing that kind of made me go, ugh.
So when you do you have to wait for the lives to recharge?
I don't know, actually. Let's have a look.
Well, you check that out. That's Glitch Dash. That's out right now. I'll talk about Disassembler very quickly. I've only played a tiny bit of it, but I'm already loving it. So what you've got here is a tile-based colour-matching puzzler, which sounds like the dullest thing in the world, I know. But what you're trying to do is it presents you with like a top-down schematic view with some tiles on it. So that's all you're looking at. The obvious example is the first level where you've just got a line of coloured blocks and you've got kind of like a green one, a green one, a green one, a red one, a green one, a red one, a red one, a red one. So you've got kind of a block of green and a block of red at either end of this line. And then you've got two conflicting ones. They're out of sequence, basically. And you can, in one swipe, just slide the green tile through that red one to meet its green friends on the other side. And that will push the red one back over to meet its red friends. So it's like, chook. So now there's just a solid block of red and a solid block of green. Boom. And the level flies apart and it's all done. But the layout of the level changes massively. So what starts off with a straight corridor, just a line of tiles, turns into patterns of tiles. Then they start introducing other mechanics involving patterns and tiles with two colours on them, and things start getting much more confusing. I haven't gotten as far as it getting super confusing yet, only a few iterations in. But the click, right, the movement, this is about taking a tiny element of the gameplay and making that be the hook that keeps you in, okay? So with most match 3 puzzlers, they've got that, you just slide your finger across and shift the bit of fruit or gem or whatever it is into place, and frankly, I don't care, it does nothing for me. This, that movement, that thing where the tile just flips up, you move over it and you release, and it clicks. It does this little click M, and it's absolutely lush.
Is it? Does it feel, like, nice and fluid?
It's an incredible sense of satisfaction from this little click. And it's such a small thing, but when that's one of your key mechanics, that's basically your only thing, is you're moving tiles around. So making the process of movement feel as satisfying as it does is really, really smart. Then there's the cerebral aspect of it, which is you working out the puzzle. So those are the two strands. But just making that bit feel so good, it's just like, oh, I want to keep doing this movement forever. Because it's like, click. And if you like the OCD thing of like, I'm going to move the tiles and now there's a beautiful, neat, symmetrical pattern and it all flies apart, that's very, very satisfying as well. But they've absolutely nailed just that sweep, click, sweep, click, sweep, click. You're like, lush, 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 boom, done. Ah. It's such a simple thing to get right, but I really think that he's knocked it out of the park with just that little movement. I'm going to be doing the review of this, or certainly the video of it of some kind, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to convey, or how well it will translate in video, how good it feels. It's £2.99 or $2.99. Maybe go and have a look at that. Disassembler is the name of it. Did you find that glitch dash thing?
So I had a look at glitch dash, used up all my lives, and it took 158 seconds for me to get 9 more.
Oh.
So actually, this is way better than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be one of those things that, like, you get recharged 1 life per minute or something.
Yeah, that's quite generous as far as live recharges go, so fair play. Yeah, fair play to them for that.
I think you can pay £1.50 to get unlimited lives, so I guess that just unlocks that whole game, really.
That's all right. We like that system. Okay, fair play to them. Now, Layers of Fear, we've already talked to the developer about it. This is now out on the Switch, so £17.99, $19.99. I've played the PS4 version. As I mentioned, I haven't played the Switch version, so that's a shrug, but we will be doing the review of this. Do you know who they're roping in? Because I know you often get called in for Switch reviews.
I don't think it's me this time. Okay, Harry hasn't told me who it's going to be.
Fair enough, then. So, yeah, we'll get back to you on how that one handles on the Switch, but it's available if you want to dive straight in. Now, one I haven't played this week is Sinker, S-I-N-K-R, which is this puzzler which involves like hooks on the ends of strings and pucks, and I think you're trying to move them around so you can get the pucks in the right place. That's what I've gathered from the video. I haven't played it, so it's guesswork at this point, but we will definitely be covering this one because it looks kind of neat. It's only 99p or 99p, but that is available right now if you fancy a look at it. And I've been playing a bunch of Dice Brawl, Captain's League.
Oh yeah, Harry said it was basically Jumanji.
It totally is basically Jumanji, and I think it's because it's from the same developers of Jumanji.
Ah, okay, that makes more sense.
I looked into the history of this one, and it looks to me like it was a different game beforehand, like it was done in portrait mode, and the layout looked totally different. Same mechanics, but different art style. Then they got commissioned to do this Jumanji tie-in game, which was actually better than I thought it was going to be. If you haven't played it, the one that ties into the movie, the idea is that you've got this island in the middle of the screen and then a series of smaller islands surrounding it. So like maybe say 10 or 12 little islands, and they serve as the tiles you're jumping across. And the idea is you're a player on the screen and you've got an opponent, and you start at opposite sides of the screen, and then you roll dice and you hop, 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 hop. And then you can choose when you land on a tile, land on one of these little islands, to build a little battlement. And then if your opponent lands on that battlement at a later point, they will get shot by it. So it's kind of like Monopoly, only instead of building houses and paying rent, you're building fortresses and shooting your tenants.
Oh, pleasant.
There's also a boss in the middle of the level, and if you land on one of the tiles, you'll go into the middle and you get a chance to fight this little boss dude. But ultimately, what you're trying to do is defeat your opponent by strategically placing your battlements around and hoping they land on it. And then if you land on their tile, if you're both in the same place, then you can brawl, hence the brawl of Dice Brawl, and you fight out with one another. And again, it's a dice system where you roll the dice and it's pretty much up to chance. You can kind of choose low or high, increase the chances of you rolling low, increase the chances of you rolling high, or there's a little sliver in the middle, because it works in the same way as most golf games work, where, you know, you hold down the screen until you hit the point, you know, the energy bar goes up, 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 and then you release when you want it to release. And in this case, there's a little sliver in the middle of the bar, which is even, meaning you will roll an even number. So on a D6, it's going to be a 2, a 4, or a 6, which does become useful, because if a player rolls like a 1 or a 2 or a 3, your opponent, then you can go, right, I should definitely choose even, odds on, because I'll either roll 2, 4, 6, which means I've got a 2 in 3 chance of beating that player. So there is an element of tactics as well as just luck in there, and skill in making sure you hit that sliver at the right time. It's actually quite good. Like, I quite liked the Jumanji game when I was playing it in a way that I didn't expect, and had nothing to do with the movie, really, but was just a nice little tactical game, and it's using the exact same framework. It's just a reskin, really. But that game that they're reskinning is actually quite, it's not bad.
Oh, good. That's better than I was expecting.
Yeah, it's better than I was expecting too, to be honest with you. So, Dice Brawl Captain's League, that's out right now, and it's free to play both on iPhone, iPad, and on Android as well. I think that'll do this week. I think we covered the bulk there.
Sorry, I was in the middle of a yawn.
Good, I'm leaving it in. I'm leaving the yawn. If you're yawning, then I think it's probably time we head off. I think it's probably Betty Buys.
Hey, we've still got half a day to do.
Oh, shush. Yeah, all right. Hopefully when you're listening to this, lovely listener, then you're relaxed out on a sunbed drinking in the rays. But I've got to go back to work now. So is Em.
Yeah, but it's okay.
Boring. Yeah, but it's fine. It's good. Thank you for listening. As always, like, rate, subscribe. Go and check out the Outspy channel and the Pocket Gamer channel and all the channels that we do. And then come back next week and join us for more, because we'll be here and we hope you will too. See you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.